From Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar.
Today we head to Moscow at the Russian Foreign Ministry, whose spokesperson, Maria Zakharova, gave her weekly press conference on Thursday. We bring you as much of that as time allows.
27th of February, the Afghan Foreign Minister, Hanif Atmar, will pay a working visit to Moscow. And his program of the visit includes talks with his Russian colleague, Sergei Lavrov, as well as with other officials. The ministers are expected to discuss various aspects of bilateral ties, including trade and economic ones, as well as peaceful settlement of the situation in Afghanistan and countering terrorism and drug trafficking. Russia puts special emphasis on promoting national reconciliation in Afghanistan and putting an end to long-standing armed conflict in the country. We advocate for the establishment of Afghanistan as a peaceful, independent, and neutral state free from terrorism and drugs, having good relations with its neighbors, countries of the region, and the entire world. And now we'll move to the pressing issues of the international agenda. I would like to say a few words about the APEC forum. The two-day situation with the world economy requires strengthening regional cooperation, where many countries see effective means of mitigating negative consequences of the COVID-19 pandemic, and such time-tested regional mechanisms include Asia-Pacific Economic Cooperation Forum, in which Russia is actively involved since 1998. Right now, we have started preparing for the APEC summit that will take place in November. This work has brought together 40 Russian ministries, agencies, public and private companies, scientific centers, and community-based organizations that take part in 60 expert structures and dialogue platforms of the APEC. Working with APEC, we focus on creating free, non-discriminatory, transparent, and predictable trade and investment environment, digitalizing different areas of economy and public administration systems, ensuring innovative, sustainable development and secure growth. Our priority is to ensure equal access to vaccines and constructive cooperation in developing, producing, and distributing diagnostic and medical supplies. We believe that one of the successful Russian projects in the forum is the initiative on the economic upturn and integration of remote territories, and we pay special attention to maintaining cooperation between APEC and other regional associations within the framework of President Putin's initiative to form the Greater Eurasian Partnership. We also have been talking about the assistance that Russia provided to countries of the world. I will give you a few examples during today's briefing. We understand that Russia and Kazakhstan succeeded in transforming challenges of the pandemic into additional opportunities, particularly in deepening their ties in healthcare. In February, Kazakhstan started vaccination campaign with the Russian Sputnik V vaccine that was produced by Karaganda Pharmaceutical Complex. Between 5th and 12th February, Yuri Kozlov, chief pediatric surgeon of the Siberian Federal District, visited Kazakhstan. The main purpose of his visit was the establishment of the School of Pediatric Surgeons. During the week, Yuri Kozlov has carried out several surgeries in medical centers of Nur-Sultan and Almaty. These surgeries were broadcasted at the special website, and they have presented advanced and even original methods and practices of minimally invasive and endoscopic surgery in neonates, infants, and children. His visit sparked strong interest among the medical community and the wide public. We thank our friends for the warm welcome they extended to Yuri Kozlov. From our part, we will provide our every assistance to mutually enriching educational missions of Kazakh and Russian specialists. I would like to say a few words about our contribution through the UN World Food Program. The assistance that we have provided for Palestine, on February 11th in Ashdod Port, the officials of the UN World Food Program received a batch of fortified wheat flour of 936 tons. It was the fortified flour for Palestine. It was delivered by the Russian Emergency Ministry within the framework of the Russian voluntary contribution to the program's fund. This batch will be sent to the Gaza Strip to distribute it among people in need in February and March. Another thousand of tons of wheat for the Palestinians living on the West Bank is at the final stage of customs formalities. World Food Program is our key partner of the UN assistance in providing food assistance to Palestine. Apart from Palestine, we provide food assistance to CIS countries, countries of Middle East, Africa, Caribbean Basin, and Latin America. We expand the geography of humanitarian activities of Russia, and we are diversifying the assistance. The deliveries of assistance are accompanied with financial and expert support in implementing large-scale programs to establish sustainable school meal systems. And other questions that were posed by mass media, particularly it concerns Nagorno-Karabakh peace process. The situation in Nagorno-Karabakh remains stable. We haven't registered any violations of ceasefire regime. The military of the Russian peacekeeping contingent controls the situation at 27 observation posts. They continue their demining activities and they ensure the safe and secure return of refugees to Nagorno-Karabakh. The implementation of two trilateral statements was discussed on February 17th during telephone conversation of President Putin and Prime Minister of Armenia Pashinyan and Foreign Minister Lavrov with his Azerbaijanian counterpart Bayramov, as well as during the meeting of Sergei Lavrov with his Armenian counterpart Ayvazyan. The trilateral working group, co-chaired by Deputy Prime Ministers of Azerbaijan, Armenia, and Russia, continues its work. The second session of the group took place on February 12th within the video conference regime, and the results of its work were reported by the Russian government. And now the topic of Ukraine and everything that concerns the settlement of the conflict there. Russia has made a draft statement on the resolution of the situation in Ukraine. I need to say that several years ago this document was adopted by Kyiv, Donetsk, Lugansk with participation of Russia and OSCE. It was approved by the Normandy format and UN Security Council resolution. It has become part of the international law and it has become an only option for the settlement of the situation in Ukraine. Many of our colleagues, international colleagues, have been talking about it a lot. The Russian initiative in OSCE was caused by the chronic sabotage of the Minsk agreements by Kyiv, as well as attempts to distort and to revise the content and the sequence of steps laid out in the documents. Particularly, the Ukrainian officials made such statements, and we haven't heard any proper response from international organizations and from France and Germany as co-facilitators of the peace process. We haven't received any proper response from them. The text of our draft was quite simple. It had three paragraphs: to support package of measures approved by the UN Security Council, to call for its prompt implementation, and to encourage OSCE structures to facilitate the process. There is nothing new here. We're just reaffirmed our commitments on what the international community has already agreed. So no one in OSCE should have any objections on that, because all countries express similar arguments, similar ideas on weekly sessions of the OSCE Permanent Council. Well, they have been talking about it many times, and they expressed that their positions were sincere. We proceeded from the assumption that the unanimous approval of the statement would become a good message for Kyiv as well as for Donetsk and Lugansk, and will encourage them to implement the package of measures and to promote peace in Donbas. And what do you think? We were surprised, but Ukraine and Western countries refused to support the Russian draft. During two rounds of consultations, they were trying to impose wordings that went far beyond the package of measures in the UN Security Council resolution. We particularly regret that our Normandy formed partners, Germany and France, didn't support the document. The document wasn't also supported by Sweden, the chair of OSCE, whose special representative coordinates the work of the contact group. So what does it mean? What does their behavior mean? Well, it means a lot. It shows how sincere they are, but it also raises quite a reasonable question. What caused their unwillingness to confirm in writing what they have been talking about in their statements, and what have officially been adopted 6 years ago in contact group, approved in Normandy format and by United Nations? We would like to believe that behind this behavior, we would like to hope that there will be no attempts to dismantle Minsk agreements and to solve the problem of Donbas through military scenarios, but they will have to prove that to us. We call on our partners again to faithfully implement the package of measures in their entirety and in their sequence, and they will take into account the response of our partners to the Russian initiative and determine our position regarding the further role of the OSCE in settling the Ukrainian crisis. And another topic, as far as we know, the group of American and Turkish colleagues, supported by aviation, carried out naval exercises in the Black Sea. They had exercises to search for and to detect the submarine of the simulated enemy. We're talking about Arleigh Burke-class destroyers USS Fortin, USS Donald Cook, maritime patrol aircraft Poseidon, Turkish frigates Oruç Reis, Turgut Reis, as well as two F-16 fighters and reconnaissance aircraft. As for the statements of Pentagon and State Department's officials, they sounded cynical, because they said that by carrying out these exercises, Washington and its allies are advancing security in Europe. But to advance security in Europe, you have to facilitate and to promote the implementation of the Minsk agreement that will make a real contribution to that process. And the United States so deeply involved in the Ukrainian file, they could do everything to call Kyiv to fully implement its commitments that they have undertaken. That would be a real contribution to advancing and promoting security in Europe. How F-16 might achieve this goal, it's not clear. We understand that such exercises have anti-Russian bias. They take place in the vicinity of Russia near our Black Sea coastline, and they threaten peace and stability. It seems to us that the U.S. Sixth Fleet is trying to find a new enemy in the Black Sea. We have received many questions with regards to the statements made by the NATO Secretary General Stoltenberg with regard to the Russia containment and containment of China. NATO official didn't want to assess its role in the crisis of NATO-Russia relations. We have repeatedly put forward initiatives that will help us to find the way out of the crisis, that will help us to decrease tensions, will create an equitable system of European and Euro-Atlantic security. We still haven't received any replies to these initiatives. And the Russian NATO Council was frozen in 2002, which didn't happen upon the Russian initiative. We have provided information on that matter in greater detail, and we have provided information on the NATO approaches to cooperation with Russia. We talked about that on December 3rd, 2020. Since then, nothing has changed. So we still believe that that commentary is still relevant today. And now something that buzzes the world all these days. We are talking about poisoning of Navalny. So we have a lot to talk about today. Recently, the federal government of Germany, on February 15th, the German government has published its reply to the request of the German party Alternative for Germany on the so-called Navalny case. So, what have we learned from their reply? We're not talking about NGOs or civil society. We're talking about the official reply of the German government. So, according to this material, between 22nd and 31st of August 2020, Navalny was protected by security services. First, he was guarded by the Federal Criminal Police Office, but then this role was taken by the Regional Criminal Police Office of Germany. They do not refute the fact that the person involved was guarded and controlled by security agents. They also say that the traces of the chemical agent found in Navalny biological materials are identical with those that were found on the contaminated bottle and other objects. However, the reply says that the decision to determine that these traces can be considered as physical evidence falls within the competence of the Russian law. The question is, if it falls within the competence of the Russian law, why we are denied access to these objects? The government also informed that on board of the aircraft flying from Omsk to Berlin, there was Navalny's wife, Yulia Navalny, as well as his press secretary, Kira Yarmish. But it's interesting that if you read the interview with BBC Russian of September 18, 2020, Maria Pavchuk claimed that she accompanied the blogger, but not Kira Yarmish. Also, if you read the interview, you will see that on the board of the aircraft there was that contaminated bottle with traces of Novichok that was sent to Bundeswehr. There are so many lies here. It's just so incoherent, so inconsistent. I couldn't say that this discrepancies, but these are contradictory facts. As I said in the beginning, we're not talking about a journalist investigation. We're talking about the official opposition of Germany. Let's go far beyond any common sense. It seems that in this story they are trying to cover tracks of Maria Pavchuk. But it's not clear if she has any citizenships of other countries. The German government has no information if she visited Navalny in the hospital. Our partners cannot provide any answer, any clear answer to any of our questions. But it also turns out that German authorities didn't fear that the people who accompanied Navalny could be contaminated with the Novichok. They explained it with the fact that once they received proof that Navalny was poisoned, these people would have similar symptoms. But since these people didn't have any symptoms, they didn't go through any medical examinations. Well, probably they didn't have symptoms because there was no poisoning. But it's a question to the German government.
The government of Germany does admit that possibly this theory could be true because, as they say, and I quote, it does not have data whether there was examination of the accompanying persons, whether they were poisoned by Novichok as a result of transporting items with the traces of poisoning agent. That's the end of the quote. As for observing the rules of safety and security when these items were transported, the government does not have neither information nor reason to receive it. The end of quote. We see that Berlin continues to be insistent and quite blatantly hide the true circumstances of the incident with Navalny and his stay on its territory, not only from Russia, but from German parliamentarians. The details of the situation with what has happened is not shared by Berlin with even with its own allies. Naturally, that gives us reason to doubt how honest the German party is about its humanitarian ideas in this context, as it is declared. Yet again, we can state that Berlin is not prepared to give answers to the majority of key questions around the situation with Navalny. There is no proof whatsoever regarding the accusations that were claimed. There is no specific conclusion as the outcome of evaluations and all the rest of the results in order to understand what has happened. Also, the requests for information by the Prosecutor General's office has been ignored, so we did not receive substantive and reasonable answers. We'll continue to ask for clarifications from the German authorities. Also, one more very interesting matter, and we have noticed that there is a discussion in the media about the role of the Western special services in the so-called investigative dossier of Navalny. Some try to disprove that there is a connection of special services with Navalny, that he was given access to the Dresden documents of Stasi, the former DDR archive. Let's get into this situation. Indeed, according to the German law, any person can work with this archive, but only with an agreement of the German competent authorities. It also seems very unlikely that the German authorities knew nothing about the activity of the blogger, and we're not interested in that. Are you serious? Are you for real? Also, we have a suspicion that Berlin could have given the access to Stasi documents. Now it seems more plausible. What speaks for this version is that throughout the whole period after the reunification of Germany, the so-called Stasi compromise was used to settle scores with political opponents and bullying the unfavored persons. There were scandals with the archives of the DDR, State Security Services archives around. There were scandals with Willy Brandt, Chancellor, as well as Helmut Kohl. Also, what makes us suspicious toward Berlin is that a significant part of the Stasi archive happened to be in the U.S., yes, that is true, and only after a long time went back to Germany. We also have reason to believe that in this situation, Berlin has deliberately committed a blatantly non-friendly act towards Russia. We're talking about yet another aspect of large-scale anti-Russian provocation that the German authorities are deliberately trying to unfold around Mr. Navalny, trying to impact the political situation in the country. Yet another aspect of this topic, as you know, at the end of January, there was an open letter published, a letter to Mr. Lavrov by a neurologist, Mr. Kozak, who works in Switzerland, with a number of unpleasant questions in the Lancet journal about the alleged use of military-grade poisoning agent. This letter gives reason to ask a number of important questions, and our Western colleagues have no clear response as of yet. Media also paid attention to the issues pointed out by the Swiss doctor. And on the 8th of February, we have published a response by the Minister of Foreign Affairs of Russia to several of these questions on several topics that were raised by the letter. After that, the Ministry of Foreign Affairs of Russia has sent a message. It was done by the minister to the Director General of OPCW, Mr. Arias, as well as to colleagues in Germany, France, and Sweden, with a request to comment the concerns voiced by Mr. Kozak in his letter. There was the letter included as well as the interview of the Minister of Foreign Affairs of Russia, Mr. Lavrov. There were comments to this letter. We expect the OPCW as well as Berlin, Paris and Stockholm to respond on to this matter. And we expect a public reaction to boot. As you know, these capitals did not shy away from giving their evaluations, and now it's time to move on to giving proof. And now, dear colleagues, you should be as religious in giving these comments as you were in your previous evaluations. OPCW, in principle, as well as our European colleagues, could have initiated this themselves and give their authoritative opinion on all the things that were mentioned in the letter. But it seems that we'll have to remind them of that, because there were serious accusations voiced. The whole world is puzzled. Let's work on that. Now, by the way, this whole campaign that has lasted for a few months already, after the unauthorized demonstrations in our country that were followed by the attacks on law enforcement, the progressive and liberal West went against Russia with a number of baseless and improper criticisms that go beyond diplomatic work. Quite often it was just blatant interference in our domestic affairs, and we have said that. We have heard insistent calls to immediately free the violators of the public order, which were, and these violators were had some administrative measures applied against them. Sometimes there were criminal cases initiated. So we'd like to look at all partners who have concentrated in Russia, and we'd like to call upon them to cast their glance to their own domestic issues. They have a lot to do. For example, in France, which is so concerned by the situation in Russia, is not as prosperous as it could be in this regard. As you know, this country traditionally calls itself an ardent advocate of human rights. It never stops and has never stopped in using the most stringent legal measures in cases when the authorities think there is a violation of public order during manifestations. Just a few examples. Very telling were the decisions of the French theme is against Gilets Jaunes, the Yellow Vests movement. About 12,000 demonstrators were detained. There were more than 3,000 legal decisions, and no less than one-third received real prison time. well-beloved trick of the French law enforcement is to criminate demonstrators with offense against law enforcement and legal, and the court usually interprets that quite freely. For example, four people were sentenced to 2 months on parole and €7,000 fine for anti-police billboards. And for example, the court of Marseille has made the person pay €900 fine, as well as €1,000 fine against for offending a policeman.
And that's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.